Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Good evening and welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, another episode for Thursday, July 24th, 2014. I can't believe July is almost gone.
Unbelievable, isn't it? There? I'm seeing the signs out there saying at the elementary and high school saying family, you know, time to get together to meet the teachers for the new year.
Well, at least it's not saying buy your Halloween. This is Michael Norris. As always, I'm joined by two of my three compadres. Jay West is with us, and Bobby's with us in between his road rage. He's driving in the car right now, so I'm glad he was able to join us.
Not a good night to be on the road.
Well, I'm in North Georgia. The sun's shining up here. It's not raining, so I'm okay.
All right.
Well, before we get too far into this, we'll let Jay get our commercial out of the way, and then we'll jump right in as to where we're going to go tonight.
All righty, here we go. Tonight's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/GWHradio. Of course, Bobby's riding down the road. He could be listening to one of those right now, you know.
Could be.
But I chose to listen to Peach State Pandemonium.
There you go. That's a true fan and follower. You know, you never miss an episode. Hey, a little unfinished business from last week. I mentioned the ages of some of the competitors from our era that are still with us. Well, I got a phone call from Charlie Smith. And he told me that I was remiss, that's a big word, remiss in not mentioning referees. And Charlie wanted to let everybody know that he's 84 years old and he's available for personal appearances and autograph signings. And his wife, Louise, is all for it because it gets him out of the house. So there you go.
That's true. Charlie's appearances are sponsored by Renegade T-Shirt Company.
And Charlie will pay you $1 if you'll let him sign something.
And before I forget, our esteemed colleague Jerry Oates is out of town. Not sure if it's business, pleasure, or otherwise, but he emailed me early in the week and said that he wouldn't be able to join us because he. Is out of town, but we do have a couple of guests that's going to be with us. One of us is with us right now, and I'm going to get him on the line, Scott Teal. Hey, Scott, how you doing this evening?
Hey, Mike, how's everybody doing?
Doing great. It's good to hear your voice after so long of not talking to you.
It has been a while. I don't know why you've been mad at me, but it's good to hear you.
Yeah, I. That's because you didn't send me flowers. Good Lord, I was here 6 months. You could have at least sent me a wilted daisy or something.
But, I didn't think you were a flower type of guy. I didn't know that.
And courtesy of Scott Teal, we're going to have another special guest join us. I'm not going to reveal who it is until we get him on the line with us, but This is somebody who I've heard tell a lot of stories over the years, and he's going to be a treat. And I'm glad Scott hooked us up with him. But we'll talk about his career a little bit. We'll talk about the Welch family a little bit, Tennessee wrestling in general a little bit. And Scott Teal is about to come out with, in my humble opinion, probably the greatest book on a single professional wrestler that will ever have been written. And I say that because of who the subject is. In my opinion, there was always four guys who whose life story should have been told. Mario Gallant, and truly told, not publicity type stuff. But Mario Gallant, Dr. Gary Graham, Sputnik Monroe, and the gentleman that Scott has been working with for quite a while now to get this book put together, Don Fargo. And I am really looking forward to it.
It's been about a 3-year process we've been working on this thing, and the toughest thing is, I guess Don will be the first professional wrestler ever to write a book who can't read or write.
Exactly, which is even more of an amazing part of his story, to go as far as he did, to been on top of, and you know, Don's been on top of the world, he's been, you know, at the bottom of the barrel, but he's had the same attitude and same outlook on life, you know, all the way around, and he's you hear all the wild stories about him and everything, and he's mainly known, especially in the business, more for that type of stuff than he was his wrestling career, even though it lasted, you know, 30-plus years. But, and every one of them are true, as you'll find out.
Don is really quite an enigma. When you see him in the ring, or you see him the way his personal appearance is, you think he's the most the roughest, meanest guy that you could ever meet, you know, just a mean individual, you know, because of the biker appearance. But well, I'll tell you what, when you get to know Don, he is one of the most humble, unassuming people you'll ever meet. He always gives credit to everybody else. He loves animals. I mean, you would never think somebody like him, you know, is such an animal lover. And he's got such a good heart, but you just don't see that until you get to know him. And I have been fortunate to known Don since the mid 70s, and he's just a really nice person. I'm anxious for people to read his book, and there's some stories in there that everybody will enjoy. There's a lot of humor to them, and there's some you'll read and you'll say it's more information than you needed.
I can imagine what those will be.
Yeah.
Not to cut you off, Scott, but our other esteemed guest is on the line. I'm going to get him on the phone with us, but I'm going to give him a brief introduction. And you hear about the word legend thrown around a bit or a lot. And this gentleman, I don't know if he'll correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not sure he ever spent much time in Georgia. But when you get over into Alabama and Tennessee and the Gulf Coast and places like that, this man was and still is very well known, not only as a wrestler, but as a booker, promoter. He did a little bit of everything behind the scenes and in the ring, and that's the fabulous Buddy Wayne. Buddy, welcome to our show. You there?
You scared him off, Mike.
You get him such a big build-up. He thought you were talking about somebody else and hurry up.
I know. He must have passed out. No. You there with us, buddy? Well, he's showing live on here. Let me hang and mute him and try him again. Buddy Wayne, you there with us? That must be his phone making that odd noise every time I ask a question. So hang up, buddy, and try and call in again, and we'll get you back on with us.
That's strange.
I hear somebody from the great beyond there. I'm not sure they're trying to talk to us. Scott, this is Jay West. I've never had the pleasure of meeting you, but we've emailed a couple of times. First off, I'd just like to say that I'm a great fan of your Crowbar Press, and I appreciate all the things that you've done to keep the legends from our era known to the new fans and to the fans of our era, by putting out the books and the videos that you've done for everybody.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that, Jay. I've heard your name for many years. Vicki Goddard used to talk about you years and years ago when she was up here working, helping me sell programs when I was with Nick Goulas. And I never had the pleasure of meeting you. I hope you'll be able to come down to Mobile next year to the reunion and join in and have some fun with us.
It's always, you know, when the reunion first started, I filled out the application several times, and it was always a weekend that I had other obligations. But I told Charlie Smith, I said, okay, Charlie, send me an application, and I'll do my very, very best to make it this year. So I'm, you know, he says the application's in the mail, kind of like the check. So we'll see. I hope to make. Hey, speaking of the Don Fargo book, there, I was looking at the email you sent out with the cover. It's hard for me to make it out there, but who is the referee and who is the opponent that's on the cover of the book there with Don Fargo?
The opponent is Bobby Fields. Bobby and Don spent a lot of time wrestling each other in the Louisiana territory. In fact, they pretty much kicked that territory off when Lee Fields opened the territory. And the referee is none other than Cowboy Bob Kelly.
Okay, I thought maybe it was, but I was, you know, just I couldn't quite make it out. But
yeah, that was where Bob Kelly actually got his start as a wrestler. It was right there in Louisiana in that side of the Fields territory. And it was actually Don Fargo who made the suggestion that that Kelly begin wrestling as opposed to refereeing, because Don and Bobby Fields had been wrestling for years and years or a long time in the area, and they were sort of getting burnt out. They were afraid it was going to get so burnt out that they wouldn't be able to bring it back or resurrect it in the future. And so Fargo says, well, why don't you throw Kelly into the mix? So they started using him and just small little deals in the ring, and until eventually he ended up coming in and becoming a full-fledged wrestler.
That's amazing how things like that work out, you know.
Yes.
I've met Cowboy Bob Kelly a few times at some of the get-togethers that Bobby's had, and it's real pleasure to know the man. He's a very nice guy.
Absolutely. Wish him nothing but the best right now. He's going through a real hard time with chemotherapy for his cancer. And,
right.
We're praying that he'll pull through.
I've got one of your videos, shoot number 10, which is the Charlie Smith shooting with the legends. And it's very informative. Some of the things Charlie has told me over the years, and I've seen myself, it was documented in this video. And really interesting 189 minutes. It was hard to put down, but Charlie was just wanting to make sure that I put in the plug for that also.
I hope he's paying you well. I think we got Buddy back on with us. Buddy, you with us?
I'm here.
Good, good. I hope that introduction didn't stun you too bad. This is Michael Morris. We got Scott Teal, Bobby Simmons, and Jay West with us. And it's an absolute pleasure to have you on our show.
Well, I appreciate y'all having me on it.
Hi, buddy.
Hey, who is this now, Scott?
Yeah, this is Scott.
Hey, man.
Good to hear your voice again. It's only been
about
6 hours. A long time.
Okay.
Bobby, you there?
Did we lose Bobby?
Yeah, I'm here, but this is Buddy.
I was
seeing if Bobby Simmons was still with you. Yeah, it looks like Bobby must have gone through a dead spot. He's not on the board anymore. Buddy, did you ever spend much time in Georgia?
Not a whole lot. I spent a year and a half there in August, at Fort Gordon, Georgia, in the Army. And when I was there, I wrestled also. Don McIntyre was the booker at the beginning, and I think Ray Gunkel then bought into it, and Ray was doing it.
Right.
That was in 1958 and 59. But outside of that, I just made some spots, you know, not really no time in the territory.
Right.
Buddy, this is Jay West. Did you say you were actually in the Army at Fort Gordon at that time?
Yes, in Augusta.
Okay, and how were you able to, with being in the military, how were you able to work out doing bookings and things like that?
Well, let me tell you, when I was in the Army, it wasn't like being in the Army. No, I'm serious. It was I was in special services.
Okay.
Not special forces. Special services.
Gotcha.
And we had a big gym on the post, and that's where I worked. We were in charge of all the sports and so forth. We brought some people in. I don't know if you ever heard of the Arkansas Redheads or not. It's a ladies basketball team.
Oh, yeah.
We had them there. We also had, I believe it was the St. Louis Cardinals, if I ain't mistaken. They did a thing there with us. And we brought different people in. Of course, we had charge of all the pools, the golf course, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And we had the 3rd Army basketball tournament there. and we won it. I say we. I wasn't on the team, but I was, you know, connected with it.
Well, that's very interesting.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's very interesting. So you'd basically work your day, which is working in special services, was a lot different than the guys that were in the field units. Then you were freed up to take bookings at night, right?
Oh, yeah, that wasn't any problem. The Master Sergeant George, Frank Pizzuto, was a great friend. He taught me a lot of stuff in life. And I would tell Frank, I need to go to Savannah, whatever. He said, okay, take off, you know. It wasn't any problem at all.
Well, that's not the Army that I remembered from the middle 60s during the Vietnam era, where I was in North.
There wasn't anything going on at all when I was in the Army.
Right.
Any kind of wars, that is.
Right.
I always said, well, I couldn't be a Naughty Murphy.
Well, you were absolutely in the right time, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, we had no problem at all, you know. And like I say, if I could have continued doing what I did, I'd have stayed in the Army.
Right.
But, you know, because I was making, if it had been for ransom, it had been real hard, money-wise, I mean. I think, if I ain't mistaken, I was getting like $168 a month. That was with my wife's allotment. And my bills was $181.
Uh-huh.
So I was about $13 or so short. But by being, you know, wrestling like I did, then I didn't have any money problems at all. I always had money, but, you know, I mean, it wasn't no problem.
Now, since this is the Peach State Pandemonium, the subject a lot of times pretty much revolves around Atlanta, although we'll get into some other things. But you were in Atlanta on the night of the big show with Argentina Rocca, weren't you, and Dick the Bruiser?
Yeah, sure was. In fact, the reason I was there, you know, when you was in the Army, you had a reserve commitment. Well, being, you know, a wrestler, I didn't have to go to reserve meetings, but they did have to go to a two-week active duty. And they wrote me and wanted to know if I would come to Atlanta and be at 12th Army Corps headquarters. And I'd be in a, had to stay in a motel and eat restaurants, but they reimbursed me. Otherwise, I'd have to go out in the field later on. Well, you know which I did. So when I was there, they had that big show you're talking about. And I went by to see by the office to see everybody that was there, of course. And Ray Gonka was there, and he wanted to know if I'd come down. I said, well, sure, I'd be glad to, man. In fact, when Bobo Brazil went out to wrestle, I went out like his manager.
Wow.
Oh, cool.
Sounds like they had a stacked card that night.
Oh, it was Argentina Rocca, Yukon Eric. Lord, I can't remember who all, to be honest with you. But it was a great card. Bobo. And I just don't remember who all. And now, let me tell you a little funny story. Me and Dick the Bruiser, he was there also. We were in the dugout, and there was a little pretty little girl about 5 years old come up. And you know how Dick talked. Little girl comes up, and she goes, Mr. Bruiser, could I have your autograph? He looked out, looked all around, got back in the dugout, signed it, give it to her. When she walked off, he goes, how you tell a little girl like that? No. He didn't want nobody to see a sign that on her. He was a great guy, man. Man, he was great. I loved little Dick. I sure did.
Now, buddy, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were trained by Mario Galanto, weren't you?
Yes, actually I did. Mario helped me an awful lot. When I first met Mario, he was in Memphis, of course, and he was running. Butch Boyette was his name, Bonnie Lee Boyette to be exact, but they called him Butch. I met him, and he introduced me to a guy named Henry Allen, who really basically trained me. Mario taught me the finer points and got me scheduled a book. He called me up one day and wanted to know, hey, kid, what are you going to do tonight? I said, well, nothing. He goes, you'll go to Jonesboro with me. I said, yeah, I guess so. He said, what kind of car you got? He was looking for a ride. And it tickled me to death, man. So I went over there to Virgil Hatfield. Speedy Hatfield was a promoter. And I met Virgil. That's where I first met Bobby and Don and Lee. And we all started about the same time. As you know, Scott, my real name is Dwayne Peel, P-E-A-L. Well, a lot of people thought it was Fields. And a lot of people thought my name was Fields and thought I was one of the brothers. I had a lot of people that asked me how my brothers do it. And I just got tired of saying, well, I'm not a Field. I'd say, oh, they're doing great, you know. And that's one of the reasons I changed my name from Dwayne Peel to Buddy Wayne because so many people thought I was one of the Fields boys, which would have been a privilege to be called that because of me. They were like kin folks to me. I mean, I thought the world, all three of them guys, they were great. I mean, Lee was the best person you'd ever want to work for as a promoter, that is. I mean, he was very honest. He was down to earth. And he was, I just thought the world of him.
Right. Yeah, now, you just said something that I didn't realize. Dwayne Peel, there's not an E on the end of Peel?
No, Norman Vincent asked us not to put the E on it.
Is your real last name, though, does it have the E?
No. You know who Norman Vincent Peel is, don't you?
Yes, right.
Okay, that's a joke, I would say, but Norman Vincent asked me not to put the E on the end of my name.
Oh, I got you. I was following that.
A little joke.
I think the common, what most people have always thought was it was P-E-A-L-E. I didn't know it was just P-E-A-L.
Right, that's all. In fact, I was going to go to England back in 68, and Steve Clinton, I don't know if y'all remember him or not, his daddy was a big promoter over there in Europe, and he said, the only thing, I need to change my name because I'd be a foreigner, but Peel is a common name in England.
Right.
In fact, John Peel is the founder of Scotland Yard.
Huh.
And Bobby Peel, Robert Peel, is the reason they call the police there Bobbies. It was his brother. John Peel was the founder of Scotland Yard.
Uh-huh.
Very interesting.
Fascinating.
Well,
tell me,
go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Jay.
I was just wondering, for those of us that primarily from the Georgia area that don't know that much about you, buddy, and what I know primarily is from the magazines that that I read during the era. But when did you first start working?
About 1953.
And what territory was that?
In Tennessee.
Okay, and
Bill Golden was a promoter that did the booking for the Dyersburg office, which is a subsidiary of Nashville. And some reason Bill liked me, and I was just a young boy, like 18, 19, you know, and he liked me for some reason, and he would book me, you know, and that's how really I got started. Him and Mario was the ones, main people in my career to get me started.
Was it something that you really wanted to do, or did you just happen into it?
Wrestling, you mean?
Yes.
In 1948, TV comes to Memphis. And one of the big programs was the wrestling from the Ellis Auditorium on Monday night. And I weighed about 100 pounds. I was about 5 foot tall when I was 14 in the ninth grade. Uh-huh. And I wanted to be a wrestler, and everybody laughed at me. Back then, nobody lifted weights. If you did, they made fun of you. And I got a little old book called From George F. Jowett, kind of like a Charles Atlas course. I paid a quarter for the little book. I think the course, if you send off, was like $25. And had exercise, and I had a little piece of iron, like a little iron rail, and I'd curl that thing. Then I borrowed some weights from my cousin who got killed in Italy. I borrowed them from his daddy during World War II. Then I finally ended up with like 2,000 or 3,000 pounds of weights. The time I graduated, I weighed about 185.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my coach said I'd never be a wrestler because I was too little, but I fooled him.
No kidding. Well, that's very interesting, and what I followed of you. You had a great career, and very glad to finally get an opportunity to talk to you, and very glad to have you on the show tonight.
I just wish I could go back and do it all over again.
Well, you know, you're not the only guy in that boat, I'm sure.
Me and Kurt Von Brauner was talking a few years ago at the reunion in Mobile, and I said, you know, Kurt, we had a lot of bad times, but even our bad times was good. And he said the same thing I did, that, you know, he'd really wish we could do it all over.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But I enjoyed every minute of it. I sure did.
Tell me what you remember about
Michael. Can y'all hear me? I had to get my composure back. He made $168 in the Army. And he went to work for Nick, took a pay cut. I've been upset. I don't know how he survived.
Hey, let me tell you a little story there. I don't know which one I'm talking to. Nick Douglas was not a Nick Gulas was not a bad payoff man. I don't care what anybody says. I thought the world of Nick. Now, Roy was a no good at, well, I ain't going to say. I didn't care for him. But Nick was a good person. The only thing Nick did, let me tell you what he would do. We were in Chattanooga one Sunday, and we were walking down the hall. He said, oh, boy, had a $10,000 house tonight. Back then, that was a good house. It'd be a good house now, a lot of these places. But anyway, I said, Nick, it wasn't quite $8,000. Oh, man, it's close enough to be $10,000. So we went in the dressing room. He told everybody it's a $10,000 house. But when he paid off, he paid on the $8,000 house. So everybody thought they were getting screwed, and they wasn't. He exaggerated, the house. But Nick was not a bad payoff man. He paid. Hey, I promoted with Nick also. And I know I've been both a wrestler and a promoter. Roy Welch said every wrestler should promote once, and every promoter should wrestle once. Then you see both ends of it. But I get so sick and tired of people talking about the bad payoffs Nick had, and they was not bad. Roy was the one that was a no-good so-and-so. A guy come in the office one day, and he told Nick, he said, Mr. Gulas, I'm not complaining, but I'm not really making no money. And Roy says, Nick, now this old boy is a good old boy. Why don't we do this? Why don't you give him some good booking? He don't complain about his trips or what match he's on or nothing. Give him some good bookings. The boy left Roy thinking he was going to make money. After he went out, Roy said, starve that son of a bitch till he died. That's the lead. I mean, that's the kind of guy Roy was. Let me tell you a funny story Lauren Littlebrook told me in Atlanta, in fact. We were at the bar one night after the matches, and he told me, he says, when he first met Roy and Nick, said he went to the territory, and back then $15 would be like $150 now, the way the prices were. And he said he wrestled three times, made $45, $15 a night, and he spent $60. So he told Nick at the office there, out in the lobby of that hotel, that he wrestled three times, made $45, he spent $60. About the time Roy walked up, Nick said, hey, this is my partner, Roy. Tell Roy what you just told me. Listen to this man, Roy. So he said, yeah, Mr. Wells said, I wrestled three times and made $45, and I spent $60. Roy said, huh, you wrestled three times and made $45 and spent $60. And Littlebrook said, well, I think he's going to give you some more money. Roy looked at him and said, well, ain't you glad you didn't wrestle six times? And turned around and walked off. Now, that's the kind of guy Roy would.
Oh, my. Tell a little bit about, if you don't mind, talk a little bit about how you, I don't want to, oh, I tell you what, let's go back to your first match. Do you remember much about your first match? Wasn't it with Ronnie Allen?
That's right, in Jonesboro, Arkansas. Now, that wasn't my first match. It was my first match I got paid for. My first match was at Veterans Hospital in Memphis, the Kennedy Veterans Hospital. It was a big sprawling compound then. Now it's downtown, a big hospital. But we would go out there about once a month and meet different guys. Mario would do it sometimes. Different guys would go out there on the Tuesday. Some of the guys that wrestled Memphis on Monday would stay over, and they didn't do anything. We'd go out there and put on matches for the patients. But, of course, we didn't get paid for it. But that was my first matches. But my first paid match was Ronnie Allen in Jonesboro, Arkansas.
Okay. Tell me a little bit of how that came about.
He went to college at Arkansas State. And they thought he might help bring some of the college people in if he wrestled. So Speedy or Virgil, I always called him Hatfield. He called me and wanted to know if I would wrestle him. I said, sure, I'm tickled to death to do it. So that's the first match.
Do you remember how much you made that night, buddy?
Probably $15 to $20. But $15 in, like I say, is like $150 now.
Absolutely.
Gas was like 28 cents a gallon.
Yes, sir.
And a Coke was a nickel. I think beer was with $1 a six pack for Bush. If you wanted Budweiser, it's $1.25. So, it was a lot cheaper. I stayed at the Orloff Hotel in Toledo in 1955, and my room for the whole week was $12.50 at the Orloff Hotel in Toledo, Ohio.
Wow.
So, and you could get breakfast for 65 cents and get a good steak for $1.50. Things are a lot cheaper, of course. So, if you made $100 one night, man, you had some money.
All right. Go ahead, y'all guys. Shoot some questions if you'd like. I don't want to hog the spot. I'll hog the microphone.
Well, that's fine. You give my voice a rest.
Buddy, where do you think, at what point do you think in your career were you the most on top, and what programs were you working at that time?
Probably in 68 or so. Nick called me, wanted a phone to come to Birmingham and wrestle. And I said, yeah, and he brought me and Bob Roundstead down there. And we made a team. And then 68, 69, 70. Then I went down with Bill Golden in 72 or 3, 72, I believe. And I stayed there with Bill for about 3 years. Then I come back up here in 75. Then Jared offered me a deal about promoting and other stuff, and I ended up working with him. And let me tell you, when I started working with Jerry in 1975, I hate to say it, but I was broke. I mean, I didn't have money. That was 76. And by March, I done bought a new Lincoln Town Car, Town Coupe, actually. Had $2,000 or $3,000 in the bank. All my bills paid, bought a new TV, a new washer, a new dryer, a new refrigerator. In just a matter of 3 months, we made some money. It was unreal what we were making. That was 1976.
And just so everybody knows who you're talking about, you mentioned Jerry. You're talking about Jerry.
Oh, Jerry Jarrett, yeah. Yeah. Jerry told me, said, we're going to split the territory. Nick's going to run one end, I'm going to run the other. And we're going to do something we've never done before. We're going to take the top names and put in the spot shows. And if you will run the spot shows, after we pay everything, the booking, whatever, me and you will split the profit. And I said, well, can't go wrong there. He says, if there's a loss, I'll take the loss. Well, it couldn't be, you know, there's no way it could go wrong. So anyway, the first night, we run Far City, Arkansas, and it did $1,500. And like I said, that don't sound like a lot of money. But back then, that was fantastic for a spot show. Usually 500 or 600 would be a good spot show. But again, you wouldn't have maybe six men on a card.
I was going to ask you, how many guys would you have working a spot show like that?
Usually about six. You had a single match, 2 out of 3, and a tag match, 2 out of 3, or maybe 2 out of 3 matches, 3 of them. But it was completely different. You didn't have to split the money up. Now, me and Jarrett was sitting up. We'll get back to Jerry first. Let me say this. When we got that the first time, I told Jerry what we made, a profit, and he said, well, just hold it. Well, he'd done that for 2 or 3 months. And finally, I said, Jerry, I need to talk to you. He said, what's wrong, buddy? I said, nothing wrong. I said, well, I need to give you some money. I said, I haven't given you any money at all on our deal, on our split. He said, buddy, put his hand on my shoulder. I said, have you got all your bills paid? I said, yeah. He said, you got any money in the bank? I said, yeah. He said, keep it. I said,
wow.
Do what? He said, keep it. I said, Jerry, it's several thousand dollars. He said, buddy, I want you to keep it. I said, well, whatever you think, Jerry, you know. And the only town we actually ever split was Jackson, Tennessee. We did split that 50-50. Otherwise, I'd just give him a few dollars, you know. Like one night I remember in Helena, Arkansas, and a couple of other towns. But that in Helena that night, I cleared for myself $3,300.
Whoa.
And I had a couple. I mean, that was back in 75, when I 76, when our tickets was like $4 and $5, too. And I had a couple other towns. I probably had about $6,000 or $7,000 profit that week. So I told Jerry what I had. He said, well, just give me $700. Is that okay? I said, yeah, that's fine. You know, so that's the kind of guy Jared is. So anybody talk bad about Jared, go not talk to me first.
talking about
Can
ticket
you...
prices. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Jared. Go ahead.
Talking about ticket prices, I've got one program here that I've gotten, that I've saved Wednesday, June 11th, 1975. This was from the Fairgrounds Arena, Nick Gulas, Roy Welch promotion. And the ticket prices for that were ringside $350, General admission $2.50, and children under 10, $1.50. This was, as I said, the ticket prices there with Gouis and Welchin. This was 1975. And the main event on that show that night was return grudge tag battle, no time limit, no disqualification. Carl von Steiger, Otto von Heller with Sam Bass versus Jackie Fargo, Luke Graham, and Steve Kovac. So that's what they were charging ringside at that time. I would imagine that was pretty much the standard ticket price around the circuit, huh?
Yes, it was. It sure was. I remember in Memphis when ringside wasn't but $2.40. Don't ask me why 40, but that's what it was. And general admission, I think, was, if I'm not mistaken, was like $2 maybe. I know the circle they called it was $1.80, and the general admission, I think, was $1
mm-hmm.
back then. Because I remember when Buddy Fuller came in, he raised the price. He said $1 is not enough to charge, and I agree with him.
Huh.
But our prices was a lot lower. I've had some programs that I've seen that had, like, ringside for $1.50 and 50 cents for children. That was a long time ago, of course.
Right.
Now, did you book before? You booked back with Nick Gula some, too, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. When I first started in 62, Jonesboro was the first town I ever promoted. Yeah, I worked with Nick up until, until I went down with Bill Gold, and then when I come back, I still work with Nick and Jerry both, you know. But then, of course, Jerry broke away, and I was with Jerry.
Tell a little bit about the early – do you have any stories about the early days of booking? How did you handle things with Nick? Did you actually book the shows, or did he book the shows and tell you you got these guys?
No, I would call Nick, and I would say, Nick, we got Sparks, Alabama, for example. And he'd say, okay, who you need in there? I'd say, well – ever who we had on top in Birmingham or Memphis, naturally we'd want them, you know, both TVs they picked up. And I said, well, let me have, I'm just using names now, of interns against Lynn Ross and Bearcat Brown. He said, okay. Then I'd say, how about so-and-so? And then let me tell you another boy I'd say, well, how about Jerry Lawler? Jerry Lawler. I said, yeah, man. With reasons, because Jerry was just starting. And in his book, he gave me credit for getting started. Because, you know, that's exactly what happened. And I didn't like to drive, and Jerry did, so I wanted Jerry with me. I hated driving. And he'd say, oh, Jerry, all that's all you and Fargo talk about. I said, Nick, that boy going to make some money one day. All right, put the little son of a bitch in there. That was the little story there. But everyone I would ask for, if they were available, Nick would give them to me. Because naturally he wanted to make money, too, because they got a booking fee.
Yeah.
But I paid Nick a booking fee. I didn't work on a partnership with him.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Nick.
Give you an example of what. Go ahead, Scott.
I was just going to say, I thought the story about Nick coming in bragging about the house, how much it was, when, and then making payoffs on the real house was funny, because I heard Nick so many times do the same thing. He was proud of, you know, the houses they drew, but he always over-exaggerated, and I think that got into trouble more than once.
It did. I mean, like I say, I mean, as far as payoffs, like I promoted and I wrestled. So, like Roy said, I saw both ends of it. And I never cheated nobody out of any money. Tell the boys the house was less than it was. Because let me tell you, the guys that's been around a long time, like myself, Fargo, Lynn Rossi, any of those guys, they can look at the house and pretty well hit on the nail how much it is. We counted the house, as we called it. I know I had a town one time in Kennett, Missouri, and I did $2,800 in it. And again, that was a lot of money back then. And Duke Myers told Jared it looked better. It looked like around $3,100. So Ken was wrestling my son at that time, just starting. And I said, Ken, what do you think that house was? It's, well, me and Duke figured about $3,100. I said, well, it wasn't. It was 28. He said, well, I believe you. And I said, well, he said, did you have any free tickets? I said, yeah, I had 50. I gave them the radio. Well, that was $250 there, you know, $5 a piece. So then I said, I'll give some of the newspaper and a few when I put out the posters. So we figured about $300 worth of free tickets. So add 28 and 300, what do you get? You get 3,100. So they hit it pretty well on the button what we actually had.
Huh.
I mean, it wasn't that much money, but I'm far, it wouldn't have been if everybody would have paid.
Yeah.
Now, the only one that could call a house was Dennis Godfrey. You could have a $5,000 house, and he'd tell you, look, maybe about $1,500 to him. That's the exact opposite.
Did you, as a wrestler, well, you know, you enjoyed the camaraderie with the boys, and but when you became a promoter and started booking the towns, did your relationship, did you notice it changing with anybody? Did the boys look at you differently, maybe not trust you as much, or did you get that feeling?
Well, as far as I know, everybody trusts me. The only one that I ever really had any problem with, and I don't know why, and he knocked me all the time, was Phil Hickerson, and I don't know why. But Jerry told me, said, every time I picked him up at the motel to go to TV one Saturday morning, he said, every time I talk to Phil, boy, he knocks you. I said, well, Jerry, I don't know why. He said, well, what does he do, Phil? He said, well, he always wants to act like a big shot. He said, what are you talking about? I said, well, he drives that big old car and he, you know, acts like he's better than anybody else. I said, well, hey, that Lincoln we was talking about, you know. In fact, Jared had a car a lot, and I ended up getting the car from him. He gave me a heck of a deal on it. It was Lincoln Town Coupe, and the banker owned it. It didn't have 1,900 miles on it. I mean, practically no miles at all. And he would give it to me, really. But anyway, and he said, let me tell you what the deal is. He said, Phil looks at you because he thinks you are a big shot. You drive that nice car. He can be gone tomorrow, you'll be here forever. And you're making more money in one night than he makes all week. So but at the same time, I was the one that was taking the chances of losing money, too. When you promote, don't mean you're going to make money. You can lose your rear end, you know, in any kind of promotion. And rest is no different. You can have a heck of a card, and you can have a big snowstorm or something coming in, and you can end up losing quite a bit of money that night. Fortunately, I was lucky. I didn't really lose too many times. But I did lose some. Ain't no question about it. Once in a while, you did lose money.
Yeah. And you took all the risk.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the one that rented the building, that paid the taxes, the insurance, the wrestlers, the publicity, the TV, if you had TV, you know. So you may have several $1,000s spent before you have opened your doors. If people don't show up, hey, who's going to be getting paid?
Absolutely. You know, and you got that situation, you know, as the promoter, where you've got these guys on the card, the people are expecting to see them, and then you never know with the weather and whatnot, you never feel secure until the last guy walks in the door and, you know, you've got your card
exactly.
ready to go.
So, you know, I mean, a lot of things can happen. It could just be maybe it was over the good card. People didn't want to see it. I always said if they didn't come, it's because they didn't want to see what you had. And if your house is real good one week, the next week it drops real bad, that means they wasn't happy with what they saw. And by happy, I don't mean ha, 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 like they liked it. They didn't like it. We used to say you can't make money by being funny. You know, you got to go out there and really make them people want to come back and see something next week.
Now, tell me, you actually had an opportunity to book Lou Fez on some of those.
Yes. I booked Lou when he was champion back in the 60s. And everybody said, well, Lou was hard to do business with. He was one of the easiest people I've ever done business with. I thought the world of Lou Fez. Man, he was my idol. And the first time I ever wrestled him, the only time, in fact, when I locked up with him, I said, Lou, I want to do this all my life. And he was just, it was an honor to be around him. Tell you a little funny story real quick about Lou, too. Ken was about 17, and we had a fair date in Helen, Arkansas. And Lou was on the card, and Ken refereed. Well, Ken was so enthralled watching Lou. Lou had the guy pinned. And Ken was just sitting there looking. Finally, Lou looked up and said, hey, kid, you go count him out. Oh, it embarrassed Ken. He said that I felt awful. We still laugh about that. Yeah, he said, hey, kid, you go count him out. But Lou, I mean, I know I had him in Jonesboro, Arkansas one night against Tim Tyler. I got there at 5 o'clock, and I'm not exaggerating, there was at least 700-800 people waiting to buy tickets.
Wow.
At 6 o'clock, we quit selling them. We couldn't get them away, and it was jam-packed. And we didn't start at 8:30.
Wow, 2.5 hours early, you were sold out.
Hey, and I'm going to estimate we turned away at least a couple thousand people.
Wow.
I should have done one of two things. Tried to went to an outdoor arena, if I could found one. Because we told about in 66 or something like that, 65. Either that or either went up on my prices, you know. But with that card, it was unreal. We figured we turned at least a couple thousand away. We just couldn't get them in. People sat there for 2.5 hours waiting for the matches.
Who did he wrestle that night? Do you remember?
Tim Tyler.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned that's right. Okay. Very interesting.
Yep. Tim was hollering a firecracker.
You booked him against Jim Holly, too, one time, didn't you? Or...
Sure did.
Tell me a little bit about Jim. I hear Jim's name a lot bandied about in the circuits down here, but I just never really knew anything about him.
Well, Jim was a good old boy. He was just a real down-to-earth person. He weighed probably about 300 and a quarter or something like that, but he could move. He was real good in that ring. He knew what he was doing. And I used Jim a lot. He always drew money wherever I used him. He died, I don't know how long ago. I don't even remember when he did die, but I know he did die. But I thought a lot of Jim Holly. I sure did. But him and Lou had a great match.
Yeah, tell me about. I remember you telling me some stories about that. Do you remember anything about him wrestling Lou?
Oh yeah. What happened in the first fall? Lou used that Roman backbreaker, where he drops backwards, the suplex they call it now. I said Roman. It wasn't a Roman back. Yeah, it was anyway. And he used that, and they went quite a while on the first fall. So when he come back for the second fall, Jim wasn't able to come back. And Lou said, well, I don't think we're going to cut his hair if he lost. And Lou would lose the belt. And Lou said, got on the mic and said, look, this man is one of the toughest I've wrestled. He was hurt, and I don't think we should cut his hair. But everybody hated Jim Holly. And everybody thought, cut his hair, cut his hair. And Lou looks over at me and goes, well, I tried. He was trying not to cut his hair. But that's the kind of guy Lou was.
Buddy, when you were on top as a competitor, who were a couple of the guys that you liked to work against?
God, I like to work with all of them. All of them. One of the easiest guys you ever worked with, everybody that used to always say, like a night off, was Mac York. Mac was the ring. I don't know if y'all remember him or not. I'm sure you did, Scott. Paul
Morton.
Brother. Yeah, but not everybody I ever worked with, was great, so many. Just like Glenn Rossi, Dennis Hall. Dennis Hall, the only thing about Dennis, me and him couldn't wrestle each other for trying to keep from laughing. When they get our instruction, he'd do something. I'd say, Dennis, quit that, man. Quit it now. And we'd end up both of us laughing. People probably thought we were crazy. But Dennis was another great friend. I thought the world of Dennis.
Jim Holly was sort of a big, like you said, he was well known over in West Memphis area. Not, I don't guess so much Memphis as he was in, like Jonesboro and those places.
Yeah.
Why did he ever? To me, he's almost like a Whitey Caldwell type guy. Whitey Caldwell was such a big name over in East Tennessee. Why didn't Jim Holly ever branch out, and go somewhere else?
I guess he just didn't want to. That's the only thing I can figure. I never asked him why he didn't, but probably just didn't want to.
Uh-huh.
I really don't know.
Yeah.
Well, buddy, I'm going to throw another name at you. Go ahead, Scott.
Oh, you go ahead, Mike. That's fine. I've got questions I'll ask as we go. You go ahead.
Well, this is a name that I've seen. He passed through the Gulf Coast region a time or two. And I know Rocket Monroe, he was either helped Rocket train, and I'm talking about Maury Hyde, the original of the second.
Yeah, right, I know.
And this guy, I think, was a local guy from Memphis, but you don't see much about him, a guy named Jim or Jimbo Stewart.
Oh, yeah, Jimbo. I knew real well. Yeah, I knew Jimbo real well. He was his daddy owned the big, I call it junkyard. They call it salvage yard now. And it was worth quite a bit of money, you know. And Jimbo was just one of the best guys you ever met. I would call him up. I'd say, Jimbo, you got a part for so-and-so. Yeah, yeah, come get it. Come get it. He had no idea if he had that part or not. But he had a man that worked there that knew where everything was. But Jimbo, you go over there, he wouldn't let you pay for it. You try to pay him, he wouldn't take no money. He gave me so much stuff one time, I got embarrassed asking for any more. He wouldn't take no money. Yeah, Jimbo was a great guy. And he broke his foot, his ankle, actually, in Jonesboro one night. And after that, he just never did do much after that. I don't know how it broke. It just broke. It looked like his foot was nailed to the mat, and he fell back, but it broke it. I don't know what happened. And I have no idea, but he broke it. But Jim was a great guy. And, of course, he's gone now, too. Many of the guys have died. And it's sad, man. It's sad.
It is. Absolutely.
One reason I don't go to the Mobile reunion is that reason. When I go down there, there's people that are there to me shouldn't even be there because they're not wrestlers, but regardless. But the ones that I did want to see, the Fields boys, Sputnik, Billy Wicks is not dead, but he can't make it. So many guys can't make it. The Lou's gone. You go down there, it'd actually be depressing for me. Now, you mentioned Bob Kelly a while ago. Bob was a great guy. I really thought a lot of Bob. He'd be one of the few guys I'd want to see if I went down there. But to be honest, going down there, all the people that are gone, Jack Donovan, Corsica Joe, Sarah Lee, Penny Banner, Adam A. Martinez, Moolah, Donna Cristinella, I mean, so many, Mae Young, so many of them that are not with us anymore. And now the reunion you have in Nashville is a different story. A lot of the older guys are around, but it's not a bunch of guys there that, well, I hate to say wannabes, but that's what they are. We have guys that did actually wrestle and make a living at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's sad. I look back on my old pictures from the reunions 20-some years ago down in Mobile, and it's just amazing the number of people that are gone. You look at that picture and one right after the other. Dick Dunn.
I did the same thing the other day. I did the same thing. I looked at them. I thought, God, they are gone. He's gone. That's gone. Every one of them. Not every one of them, but you'd have three pictures and maybe two of them was already gone. The one picture I had Florence Hatfield or Don's wife. And, of course, Joe's wife, Sarah Lee, and Jack Donovan in the picture. All three of them, they're gone now, And it's sad, but, of course, we're all going to go one day.
Right.
Well, Scott, that's one of the great things about what you have done with some of the guys that are on up there is to capture their memories and either on video or in the books and have made what they did available to folks that are coming along now or to the fans because honestly without what you have done I would say probably 75-80% of that era would be lost, no doubt about it.
Thank you for saying that, because I have people a lot of times they say they enjoy, like my old Whatever Happened To, I'm getting ready to release all my old interviews. And, in fact, I did one with Buddy. It was a great interview in one of the past
20 pages.
Yes, it was a long one. It was great.
It was
good.
I was really appreciative of that. I still want to do a book with you, Scott.
Well, we'll talk about that when you get up here in September. We'll get down
to it. What will you pay me? That's another thing.
he's putting you against the wall right now. This is the bottom line.
Well, that's really easy. All Buddy has to do is send me $1,000 to get it started, and we'll go.
Will you take a check?
Yeah, I'll take one.
Okay.
But back to Jay, what Jay asked is, I have a lot of people that tell me, they say that the reason they enjoy my Whatever Happened To interviews is because a lot of them are about guys that you've never heard of. But they find the stories fascinating. The guys that Dick Dunn and these guys that never really, never made it to New York, they weren't main eventers. And I tell people all the time, I prefer to interview the guys that were underneath cards, you know, the guys that were struggling to make it up, you know, the semifinals. The main event guys are great to talk with, but the great, there's a lot of, I mean, fantastic, hilarious stories, road stories of the guys that, you know, worked underneath and didn't get the big, make the big money, didn't get the big shots. Buddy Wayne's interview that I did was, to me, was fascinating, him talking about the Tennessee territory, West Tennessee, and what he did as a, you know, as a promoter there and booking. I never, until I did the interview, I never realized Buddy had, was such, to me, he was an important person in West Tennessee, and people don't realize that. Jerry Jarrett, I'm not knocking Jerry here, but Jerry gets all the credit for promoting, you know, the West Memphis territory. But Buddy, when, if you read that interview, which it'll be out in this book eventually, but if you read this interview with Buddy, you would be amazed at the things that he accomplished out there in West Tennessee in his lifetime. I mean, I was just totally in awe of what he told me, and I've heard the other guys since then tell me about what a great, you know, promoter Buddy was. And I agree with Buddy. He said he never heard anybody really say anything bad about him except the one person. I haven't either. I've never heard anybody say anything bad. Well, my wife did because he eats too much when he comes to the reunion. but other than that, that's the only thing I've ever heard.
Let me tell you another little thing real quick here from Jerry. Scott, you know about the little problem I've got. I've got pulmonary fibrosis. I don't know if you know what that is or not. So scarring of the lungs, and there's no cure for it. You got a 3 to 5 year life expectancy, and I have to use oxygen a lot. But anyway, I put on that on the Facebook or something about the condition several months ago when I found out about it. And I got a little email from Jerry. And in it, he really made me feel good. He said something about, you never got credit for some of the things you did. And when you run a town, I never worried about you sending a report in less than what was actually there. You know, and it really made me feel good that he said that. In other words, he trusted me. He wasn't worried about me saying it drew 10,000 when it really did 15. You know,
right.
So but that made me feel real good. But I just like to say, I mean, I've got so many great memories, and that's something nobody will ever take from me, is the memories.
Absolutely. Hey, let's pull back to Georgia a minute. Tell the story about the time you wrestled under another name in Atlanta for Don McIntyre.
Well, I don't know if I did in Atlanta or not, but I did in Augusta. And
that's
Augusta,
right,
the reason.
Georgia. Yeah, I meant Georgia.
Yeah. Well, the reason I was in the Army, I looked in the file cabinet about just nosing around, really, and I saw this letter from the general saying they was trying to have wrestling on the post. He said they had no objection to wrestlers wrestling on the professional wrestling on the post, but they did have objections of servicemen, you know, wrestling professionally. So I never went down and got permission to do it because I was afraid they'd be turned down. So I told Beverly McCoy, who was running the Augusta, the promoter there, about it. He said, well, we'll change your name. So we used the name Jack Burns. I don't know why Jack Burns, but that's what he told me. So anyway, when I come in the next morning, the lieutenant, the sports officer, as I walked in the gym there, he goes, hey, good morning, Jack Burns. You know, everybody knew who I was anyway. But nothing ever happened. I never had no problem. You know, in fact, that's kind of like a little celebrity on the post. You know, being on TV every Wednesday night and everything. But
yeah.
Anyway.
That's cool. Bobby, you got any questions?
Bobby dropped off again. I think he hit another dead spot, so he hasn't come up. I want to discuss something with you, buddy. You worked in a territory with, and I didn't realize your relationship with Bill Golden went back as far as it did. But I know you worked there in Montgomery with him for a few years, and you booked there too as well. But you know that's a territory that a lot of people don't even know existed, and it's kind of like Mobile. It was when you know as long as Mobile was in existence, it just didn't get a lot of magazine coverage or you know like that because Lee didn't. He really didn't think what he used to tell Kelly was, you know, I'm not going to draw anybody from New York to come down here, you know, so there's no sense in, you know, having been in the magazines. But that Montgomery territory, the reason I know about it is so many of the Mobile boys worked up there.
You know, oh,
Jack
yeah.
Donovan, or Jack Donovan and you and Frank Dalton, Burrhead, of course, was, I think if you go through Montgomery right now and stop and ask somebody where Burrhead Jones, or if they'd ever heard of Burrhead Jones, and I don't care if they're 6 years old, they would know who Burrhead Jones was.
Oh, yeah, Burrhead drew a lot of money in Montgomery. He really did. Poor fellow was helpless in the rain, but you know, if he'd listen to you, you could have a great match with Burrhead. And let me tell you, those people believed in Burrhead. They really did, especially the black people. And man, they believed in Burrhead. But I thought a lot of Burrhead. He was a good guy. I really liked him.
Yes.
There was a couple of local Montgomery guys that did okay there for Golden, and they would venture down to Mobile every once in a while. And that was Jimmy Jones, not Burrhead Jones, but Jimmy Jones and Big Jim Williams.
Right. I was going to mention Big Jim Williams. I forgot about Jimmy Jones. But, Jim Williams is a good person in the ring, too. He weighed about 300, 310, something like that, but he could move in that ring. You know, used to, when Lee was running Mobile and Bill was running Montgomery, I'd go down sometime on Sunday night to Pensacola, and they run Pensacola on Sunday night. And I always liked it because I'd go down early and stay on the beach all day, and then we'd wrestle that night and go back to Montgomery. And Lee always paid real good. I mean, real good. In fact, I think he overpaid, to be honest with you. You know, I'd go down there. I ain't going to say I didn't, you know, really earn that much, but he always paid real good. I got a little day's vacation.
I want to get into the Welches in a little bit, but tell a little bit about the Montgomery territory, what other towns Bill promoted.
Well, on Monday we run Columbus, Mississippi. Tuesday was Montgomery. Wednesday was Tuscaloosa. Thursday was Anniston. Sometime Alex City on Friday, then Selma on Saturday.
Uh-huh.
And all the towns was good. They were good.
Didn't he run spot shows as well?
Well, I ran them. Bill never did. Because we used to rent some chairs to go to Alex City every Friday when we'd run for Alex City. And I said, Bill, you ought to buy you some chairs. He said, well, I wanted to rent some spot shows. We could use them. I said, well, dang, Bill, I can run some towns. He said, will you? I said, yeah. So I started running some spot shows. And the first one I run was Tallahassee, Alabama. It's a little armory. And we packed that place. It was jam-packed, man. And I knew we'd get Dennis Condry. He used to call me Big Head. He said, look what old Big Head done. Look at the house he drew here tonight. And let me tell you first, Buddy Wayne didn't drive that house. The wrestlers drew it, not me. I was just the one promoting it. They drew it. So I never give myself credit as drawing a big house. Because when it was a bad house, I didn't say it was my fault it was a bad house either. So, but I never give myself credit to drawing. I always say that the wrestlers is what drew it.
Absolutely. The fans would, from these smaller towns, would see the guys on TV, and they were, you know, they were stars to them. And,
yes.
So you gave them the opportunity with these spot shows to see guys that, otherwise they may never have an opportunity to see it all. So, it paid off for the promoter, and it also paid off for the fans. And in all probability, some of these folks came to those spot shows, and because of that, they maybe started going to some of the bigger shows that were a little farther away from them because they got hooked on it, seeing it in those small towns.
Exactly. Yeah, I remember we could run a spot show, and we could be putting out window cards, and people would come up, 10 or 12 or 15 of them looking at it. And we'll know, you know, when it's going to be and how much you call. You know, look, you know, they was really interested. Now you put the window card, nobody paying no attention. It's a shame. Completely different.
Wow.
But like you said, I had people ask, why you run them little bitty towns? I said, well, two reasons. And one, you just mentioned, a lot of the people can't drive from so-and-so to wherever, you know.
Right.
So you can come to that town and they get to see it. It don't cost them an arm and leg, as you say. And one other thing I used to never like either, I never liked the wrestlers to insult the fans. I never will forget one night there's a little fat girl sitting on the front row. So I don't remember what town it was, but it's long ago. But she was there every week. And I say a little fat girl, she's probably a teenager, you know, a little older. And the guy come out, he said something about, look at her, and he would start walking around, you know, making fun of her. The little girl cried. Made me so mad I could have killed him. when he got to the dressing room, I said, don't you ever go out there and insult one of our fans. I said, that little girl comes here every week to see your ass. I said, if you go out there and make a fool out of her, I said, man, don't you ever do that again. Oh, I'm just trying to make her mad. I said, no, you hurt the little girl's feelings. And then another time, the man had a bunch of little kids, and one of the guys said, where you go, Salvation Army, get them clothes? And I did the same thing. I got all over him. And if he had said anything back to him, I'd probably knocked him down and he'd never been booked again because I just didn't believe in insulting our fans.
Well, you know, the guy, you know, obviously the guy was trying to get over with his gimmick, but at the same time, it's different talking to an adult than it is to, you know, to a kid because they
really take that
to heart.
If they're grown, you don't say stuff like that. You know, because maybe the man did go to the Salvation Army and get them kids clothes.
Right.
Probably did, to be honest with you. But it's not, I mean, you don't do that. That's insulting them. Insulting them and making them mad at different things.
True.
The wrong kind of heat.
Exactly.
And you know, the other thing is these people may have scraped and really saved in order to come see that match.
I remember in Jonesboro, there used to be a man came with his wife and children, and I know they didn't have no money, because back then, back in the 60s, there was still a lot of sharecroppers, farmers, you know, below smaller towns. Of course, Jonesboro is a pretty good-sized town now, but back then it wasn't. And I made a remark to, his real, called him Carol Krauser at first, then he was, one of the Russians. Dang. Well, anyway, you
know. Carol Kalmykov.
But anyway, I said to him, I said, man, I feel bad taking them people's money. He said, look, that man probably worked all week saving to get to bring his family here. That's probably the only thing they do to have enjoyment. You're bringing them enjoyment. You have nothing to be ashamed of.
Big thrill.
I felt bad, you know, that man, you know, because I knew he didn't have money. You can look at it and tell you he didn't have a lot of money.
Very interesting. Mike, do you have any questions as probably the Gulf Coast guru? Do you have any questions about Bill Golden and Montgomery?
Well, like I said, you know, there was a lot of talent that was shared. And there was a guy, Buddy, you probably remember that was worked up there for Bill. I don't know if he was a referee or an office guy or what, but he was involved in one of the biggest angles of the early 70s that happened in Mobile. I'm trying to his name was Bob Caldwell. Do you remember that name?
Oh, yeah, I knew Bob real well. He worked in the office. He went down to Mobile as the NWA official or something.
Exactly,
like that.
Right.
Yeah, I knew Bob real
and then,
well.
He got into the ring and how they set this whole thing up. It was, and I don't know if Fargo remembers this, if you talked about this for your book, but he and Kelly, they started back when Kelly was a referee in Louisiana and Fargo was Jack Dalton, and they started 66-67, and they were still beating each other's brains out in the 70s in Mobile when Fargo came back as Fargo, and Kelly was the top babyface at that time. But the angle that they ran, they had been going for weeks on end, and you know, their matches were just, you know, all-out fist fights, and you know, nobody could control them, and there was a couple of times that, you know, the police would go in there and separate them and not. But they had brought Bob Caldwell in and didn't tell anybody he was there. And he was sitting at ringside and in the middle of a typical Fargo-Kelly match where they just beating each other's brains out, he slides into the ring. Well, Kelly punched him. And, of course, it was all work, but, you know, people didn't know that. Well, next thing you know, the ring fills up with the police, and they handcuff Kelly and get him back to the back and everything, and Caldwell's back there, and I think Kelly probably tatered him because he had a swollen lip and everything. And, of course, with the cops who were not smart to the business, they were all back there in the dressing room, so they continued on with it back there. You know, Caldwell, you know, whipped out his credentials that he was an NWA official and he was there on behalf of the St. Louis office, and he was suspending Kelly. Well, of course, Kelly made a lunge at him, hit him again to put on the show in front of the cops. And so that was a big deal. They suspended Kelly until they could have a hearing in St. Louis.
And, yeah, I remember that very
Fargo
well.
Declared Fargo the new Gulf Coast champion and all that stuff. And so anyway, they worked the deal out where Kelly went on TV, and of course he couldn't wrestle, but it didn't keep him from appearing on TV. And he said that he, you know, to his own defense, he didn't know who the guy was. He thought he was a friend of Fargo's, and so he punched him in the heat of the battle. And that they were going to have a hearing in Nashville on such and such a date, and Bob wanted everybody to sign petitions and send in. And believe it or not, the people, and they, again, you know, people believed back in those days.
Oh, yeah,
and, they signed, he took something like 20,000 signatures. Of course, he didn't go anywhere, but
wow.
He got that many signatures, you know, collected, because they were doing it at every building in the Gulf Coast Territory to get, you know, sign this petition because of what went on television. So
yeah.
They ran the whole angle and whole angle. And I know Fargo, just looking at the index of Scott's book, Fargo did tell this part of it. They brought it back couple of weeks later, brought the match back, and Fargo didn't show up. He skipped the territory and took the belt with him. So Kelly brought Jackie Fargo in, and first time Jackie had been there in probably 10 years. And it fell right back into place. He and Jackie went round and round for about a month. And a young man that Jackie brought down there with him and nobody had ever heard of was Jerry Lawler. And Jerry worked down there 3 weeks in a row, but only worked Mobile because that was the only place Jackie would work. Well, Jackie made a couple of shots in Panama City, but Jerry only made Mobile, and they teamed him with Curtis Smith as a tag team. Curtis would call himself Spoiler. And they had a deal with the hippies, Boyette and Doyle, who you use up in Montgomery too, right?
Yeah, me and Mickey used to have a lot of fun together.
Yeah,
one
Mickey's
night we were going to Tuscaloosa, and on the way we had some beer, so we drank that beer. So Mike says, "Look, stop, get a little pint of wine." So we got a little pint of wine, and he said, "Let's get another one to drink on the way back." So we drank both of them before we got to the building.
Uh-oh.
And when we got there, I was drunk. Ain't no question about it. I mean, I was drunk. Bill Gold was going to the dressing room and said, "Buddy Wayne, you about half drunk, ain't you?" I said, "Bill, I am all the way drunk." But Bill understood. You know, I mean, I was messed up. Woo! Yeah, me and Biggie, we done drank all that wine. Oh, Lord have mercy, the stuff we did.
Now, when you first went to,
do what?
You
I was
first
going to say this. Go ahead, Scott. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask.
I was going to say that that's two more of the, you know, Gulf Coast regulars that worked up there. I know Rip and Eddie worked up there. Dick Dunn, Dick Peterson, they all worked up there for Bill at one time or another.
Oh yeah. Let me tell you a little story about Fargo. Let me tell you a real quick one. One night in Mobile, they had a tear-off clothes match. Don Fargo, and I don't remember who he wrestled. Anyway, they tore Don's clothes completely off, thing but his necktie. He didn't have anything. And he's going back to the dressing room. And this policeman tells his wife, "Don't be looking at him. Don't be looking at him." Because Don just strode out there like he was fully dressed. All he had on was a necktie.
That's right.
Don was something else, I tell you. We had a lot of fun together. He's one of the first guys I met when I started this business. And I went to Toledo, Ohio, in 55. He'd been up there for several months. So when I got there on Monday, we was all in a different town every night. But Thursday, when I got back from wherever I was to Toledo, he was waiting on me. We went, I think, to Ever Bar in Toledo, Ohio. Man, we had us a good time. Man, I thought a lot. Still do think the world of Don. Sure do.
Now, Bill Goldman, when you first went to work for him, he didn't want you want your help as far as booking or anything, didn't he?
No, he didn't. When we'd lose in, I used to help him. you know, after the matches in Baton Rouge, we'd get in his room, we'd get to do the TV for the next day and all. Then when I went to Montgomery, after a week or two, he says, Buddy Wayne, let me tell you something. I come down here and I dug this little territory out, and I'm the one running it. I don't need no help from nobody. I said, what? He said, I said, Bill, in Baton Rouge, we always got together, you know, for our TV. Well, I don't need no help. But what it was, Bill was very insecure. He thought everybody was going to try to take his territory. And he didn't trust me. And I don't know why, because we were good friends, you know. I remember Jimmy when he was 3 or 4 years old, you know, his son. And I don't know, I knew that was like 20 years later, you know. But Bill, for some reason, didn't trust me. And I know Gary Martin come down there. It was Jerry's brother-in-law. And Bill just tell me, I think they sent Gary down here to try to get my territory away from me. But they didn't. They got Gary out of there because they didn't want him in Nashville.
Huh.
That's a reason. But anyway.
Well, you
Bill
know,
was,
that's a very interesting story. And it's, you know, it's not really all that unusual. But it comes as such a shock to you when you think, you know, when you've been working with a guy like that for, and think that they respect you. It's very similar to the music business. I've had it happen to me a lot of times over the years. But you know, really, when you work with somebody like that, and all of a sudden they tell you they don't need your help, and it's just exactly what you're saying. They're very insecure, and they're afraid you're going to, you know, pull the rug out from under them.
Another thing, I was staying at his house when I first went to Montgomery. And I used his car to go to the grocery or something. And when I got back, he asked Jimmy where his car was. He said, Buddy got it. He went to the store. Well, you know, my car keys are on there. He'd make a trunk key out, and he'll come back there one night and open my trunk and get all my money out. I thought, what in the world wrong with him? I never thought about it. I don't remember if Jimmy told me that, but somebody, you know, told me that Bill said that. I said, what is wrong with him? I ain't going to steal his money. You know, he may go have that car he made and then come up one night when I'm asleep and get my money. But, you know, he was just insecure, I guess. But I thought a lot of Bill, though, regardless, you know.
Jerry Myatt was really good about helping him, though.
Yeah, right. He wouldn't listen to nothing I would say. So on the way to town, I'd tell Jerry Myatt, I'd say, you know what we ought to do tonight? And I'd tell him. We'd get there, he'd say, boss man. What do you think of this? He kind of had a little list or something. I don't know. And he'd tell me, dang, you would do it. You know, and I told Bill later, he goes, yeah, Jeremiah used to come up with some good ideas. I said, Bill, they were not Jerry's ideas. I said, you wouldn't listen to me. And I would tell Jerry what we ought to do, and he would tell you, and you'd do it. If I told you, you wouldn't do it. And that's the truth.
Mike, do you want to finish? Mike, do you want to? I know this is supposed to be about the well. We wanted to get to the Welches. I just wanted to bring Buddy on here. His stories are so great. I hated, you know, not to go through the story.
I'm glad you did. This has been
very entertaining and you know, inspirational and informational. I'm certainly glad that you brought Buddy on tonight, Scott.
Yeah, oh, and let me mention this. You don't have to make tapes of this, do you? I wish the heck I'd have recorded it, but I didn't. Anyway, it's too late now.
Buddy, no, it's on. It'll be on the internet. I'll send you. I'll make sure you know how to get it, or I'll send it to you.
Okay, yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, you can go back and listen to it later.
But before we
get into anything else, we're a little bit past the halfway mark, so it's another time to turn it over to Jay for a word from our sponsor.
Okay, this is my second 30 seconds of fame right here, so here we go. The Peach State Pandemonium podcast is happy to be sponsored by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment and information. They have over 150,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now. And if you sign up at our URL, which is audibletrial.com/GWHradio, you get one free audiobook at a one-month trial of the service. All right, gentlemen, back to you.
Mike, why don't you get into what we were here originally for, was the Welch family. Buddy could tell us a lot about that.
Okay.
Yeah,
just in
our talking to Buddy, we've mentioned four members of that branch family that were wrestlers, referees, promoters, everything. We mentioned Roy, of course, who was Nick's partner for so many years and a former wrestler. Speedy Hatfield, who was a promoter there in Jonesboro, Arkansas, and then helped when the Gulf Coast Territory opened. And, of course, his three sons, Lee, Bobby, and Don, were basically the biggest stars down in that territory. And then we talked about Buddy Fuller. We mentioned him and Bill Golden. All that, you know, all from the same family or branches of that same family. It's just amazing. When people talk about the great families that produce so many different people, they always talk about the Samoans, and that's always suspect anyway, because not all of those people that claim to be related to the and Hawaii's were related to them. Snuka certainly wasn't, neither was Peter Mavia, but they claimed to be cousins. You know, and the McMahons, of course, are four generations, or three generations, I guess, at this point, four if you count his daughter and son. But, you know, I don't care how many you name, you're not going to touch the influence and legacy of the Welsh family, in my opinion. And, Buddy, of course, you were there working with them hand in glove a lot of times and dealt with them as promoters. I'm sure wrestled more than, you know, more than your share of Welches and dealt with them. But, I mean, 27 or 28, to my count, people were involved in the wrestling business from that family or were related to somebody in that family, like Bill Golden was married to Boy Welch's daughter. Speedy Hatfield was married to Bonnie Welch, who was a sister of the original four brothers. Well, Scott, let me ask you something. I have heard and seen, you know, especially back in the 50s when the Welches were really in their prime as wrestlers, you know, magazine articles on them, and they all mentioned their father, Edward, the original Edward, who I guess Buddy was named after, as being a wrestler. But I have never been able to find anything that verifies that. Do you know?
No, I have never. I always thought it all started with, you know, Roy Welch and the brothers. I knew there was an Edward that Buddy Fuller had been named after, but I had never heard of any of him wrestling. I've got somebody I'm going to reach out to and ask that might know that. I doubt it because he usually reaches out to me when he wants to find something out about wrestling down here.
Right.
I'll see if I can find anything, but I have never run across anything about another, you know, an older Edward, earlier Edward.
Right.
Maybe, Buddy, you have, Buddy.
Yeah, I'm here. I haven't heard anything about Edward Welch either. I've got a buddy.
Yeah.
So, Roy's the only one I knew, unless I knew, you know what I mean, further back, you know, like their daddy or uncles or something.
Right.
I knew Roy and Jack and Herb, Lester. I knew all of the people, you know, every one of you mentioned.
Yeah.
I knew Fields Boys and the Fields Boys Boys. There's a whole bunch of them.
It makes sort of sense that
let me say one thing real quick, too. There was a girl that wrestled named Joanne Moore, and everybody thought she was a Jack Welch and Grace's daughter. She was Grace's sister.
Really?
She wrestled, I think, in the beginning as JoJo Welch, and then
exactly.
She wrestled as Joanne,
Joanne
Phillips.
Yeah.
But it was Grace's sister. She was no kin to the Welches at all, you know, as far as blood kin. But
and
a lot of
Grace
people thought
was,
that was Jack's daughter, but it wasn't.
And Grace
and
was
count me in that group because I thought she was.
Do what now?
Just to be sure people know who you're talking about, Grace is
yeah,
Jack's,
that's Jack's wife.
The older Jack Welch's wife, not Jack,
yeah.
The young Lester's son. But
no,
the
no,
old
yeah, Roy's brother.
Brother, yes.
I should have said that.
I've heard you tell stories about Grace before. Do you remember any of them? I can't write right off the top of my head, but
well, I knew her, but not, you know, wasn't that close with her. The only thing I remember mainly, Jack, the older Jack Welch, he was promoting in Huntsville, and she used to do his announcing, and for some reason Roy didn't like it. And he told him, get that fat so-and-so out of that ring. So Jack wouldn't do it. and they end up taking the town away from him because of it. But Roy had no heart at all. I mean, for being family meant absolutely nothing to him. But he just took the town away from him. And then Jack Bull got up there in the ring and told the people that they took the town away from him, and I'd appreciate it if y'all don't come no more and all that, which that didn't happen, you know. But he sure did it. But Roy, like I said, I had no use for Roy, none whatsoever. Herb was an honest, down-to-earth person. He was as honest as he could be. He was kind of I don't know the word I want to use. Obnoxious, really. Then Lester, he was real quiet. But, I mean, as far as being honest, Lester was honest, as far as I know. But Herb was as honest as he could be. I mean, I thought a lot of Herb. I didn't really care for him a lot. And I know it sounds crazy when I say I think a lot of him. He was good in the ring. He did what he's supposed to do. But we was never close friends whatsoever.
Yeah.
Now, Buddy Fuller is a different story. Buddy I knew real well. And I don't know if you know how he got his name or not. Buddy Fuller was supposed to come into territory. Well, he didn't show up. And he was booked in Corinth, Mississippi, I believe it was. So Buddy, I'm going to say Edward, was just starting then. Roy said, go down there and call yourself Buddy Fuller. That way it won't be a substitute because nobody knows him anyway. But Buddy went down there and it got over real good with the people. So he started using his name Buddy Fuller from then on.
Yep.
But Buddy was one of the best promoters I ever seen. I know I was in the Army in 59, and Buddy come into Memphis on Thanksgiving Day of 58, and I think drew 300 or 400 people at Ellis Auditorium in November. Well, when I got out of the Army in March, it had maybe 3,500 people there.
Wow.
Just a few months. And Buddy wanted to know if I wanted to go down to Mobile on the coast for a couple of weeks. And I said, yeah, because he didn't have a bunch of towns running around next then. He's going to, but he didn't at that time. So I went down there in 2 weeks to come back, and Al Galento wrestled Sputnik Monroe, and they turned people away. They had the North and South Hall open, and it was that way all summer. I mean, it was great. The spot shows, we went to little towns, Batesville, Mississippi, Jonesboro. I mean, we packed them little arenas. I mean, Jim packed the Buddy was one of the greatest there was as far as promotion. Did the same thing in Arizona. I went to Arizona with him in 62. He went out there and it was dead in the doornail. And in 3 or 4 months, we was running Phoenix twice a week on a Monday. Then run the Mesa, I believe it was, on Wednesday. And then come back and Phoenix again on Friday.
Wow.
And packed it every night, and Tucson was sold out. I mean, he knew what he was doing. Well, he had a bunch of good men that was hungry.
Yeah.
You got to be hungry. They were hungry. They would do anything, and didn't care what it was, hard ways, whatever. And that's how he built his territory. Hmm. The people believed what they were doing. We, as Bill Dundas said, we believed it. You know, when the guy packed his cross eye and split it open, believe me, you're gonna believe it.
Wow. Now, what towns did Herb promote, actually promote any towns?
Yeah, he run Bible for a long time. Uh-huh. Then he would run all those spot shows ever so often, you know. But Bible, I think, is the main one. Now, Jack, when I first met him, he ran Poplar Bluff, Missouri. Roy's brother, Jack.
Yeah.
And maybe some more, I don't know, but I remember Poplar Bluff.
And you like working with Herb? Pretty good to work for when as a promoter?
Oh, yeah. Herb was good. He was honest. Like I say, you didn't worry about, not paying you or not underpaying you, nothing else. I never worried about that anyway, to be honest with you. You know, because most, everybody always said, well, the promoters are robbers. That's bull. I know we wrestled in Knoxville. We had a real good payoff. And somebody made a remark, boy, I got a good payoff tonight. And Don Green said, yeah, it should probably have been double that if they'd have paid us what we had coming. I thought, that ain't that something, you know. I mean, a lot of guys, no matter what you give them, it ain't enough.
Yeah.
It ain't enough.
Yeah. It's never, they're always getting cheated no matter what.
Yep. Either the house is, you know, like you said, is bigger than you're being told by the promoter, or the guy himself just thinks he's not being paid what he's worth, you know.
Now, I'll tell you who was stealing money was Gus Gulas, Nick's brother, in Huntsville. Because we'd go down there, and it'd be a heck of a house. And we'd get paid, it wouldn't be right. And Bob Rem said he was my partner. We were in Birmingham, and somebody asked me what I thought the house was. And I said, it looked about $1,800 to me, which wasn't a bad house back then, they were saying. And then come in, and, hey, what's going on, Rem? How's the discussion? So Bob Rem said, out of nowhere, said, oh, Nick, by the way, I don't like that payoff in Huntsville. And neither does Buddy. And Buddy ain't said nothing. So Nick said, let me tell you, Bob, my brother runs that town, and this, that, nothing, and that. He looked over and said, Buddy, what do you think it was? It was $1,100 what we got paid on. I said, Nick, I'm going to be honest, I thought it was around $1,800. Well, hell, I heard you that I was promoting Florence then, too. I think Florence was better than what you told me, too. But anyway, Nick wanted me to go to Chattanooga with him a week or two later, and I rode down with him. He said, man, I'm going to, well, I ain't going to say the word you. I said, why? Well, you didn't back down on that Huntsville. It did look like $1,800 to me. Well, we found out later he was stealing.
Yeah.
Gus, now not Nick. That was his brother.
Yes. Yeah, Nick had a couple brothers, and but Gus was the one that promoted Huntsville. Buddy, was that when Tom Renesto was here? Because Tom and I went, Tom Renesto Sr., and I went to Huntsville one night, and that was that night Tom planned to count the house, and he actually did, and we found, you know, he came back, and he says, he told me on the way home, he says, Gus is stealing, because he stood up there with a clicker and clicked the house at Huntsville.
Oh, yeah. That's what I say. If you know, you're not going to get away with stealing, Scott, because somebody's going to catch you. I know, like one night in Florence, Alabama, Nick asked me about the house, because some of the boys went back and said it was bigger than I said. I said, well, send Danny down. No, Danny Dusick. So Danny come down with a clicker, and he clicked everybody. And we were like, the ticket sales and what he clicked was like two or three people off. I don't remember if it's under or over. I don't really remember. It's been so long ago. But Danny said, but ain't no big. He thought maybe I'm a ticket seller was stealing, you know. And I said, he said, that girl ain't stealing. Ain't nobody stealing nothing, you know. And nobody knew what Danny was doing there, not at all. You know, he just come down to help me out, you know. Mm-hmm. But you will get that all the time, though.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Anything else, Mike, on the Welch's? Yeah, just going back to the you mentioned the original Edward Welch. I wouldn't doubt there was somebody before the Fullers because, to me, there almost had to be some reason they got involved in wrestling. I mean, it's like they came into the Dyersburg area, and all of a sudden the Welches were running everything. I mean, they were in Missouri. Yeah. They had a territory there. They were everywhere. And where did they get the idea to get into wrestling? They had to have gotten a start somewhere. They couldn't have been just Joe Blow, Welch family off the street, and then they come into Dyersburg, all of a sudden they're promoting wrestling. They had to have gotten
it
somewhere.
They were all originally from Osage County, Oklahoma.
Pawhuska, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Pawhuska.
In fact, when Lee first came to Mobile, he made his debut in Mobile in 52 before when Joe Gunther was still running it. And they billed him as being a graduate of Oklahoma A&M, which wasn't true. And you know, said he was billed as being on the fields. They were all billed from Pawhuska up until they really established themselves. Then they were all billed as being from Locksley, Alabama, which is where they live. You know, I don't know. That'd be something, but I wouldn't know where to even begin to dig into that.
It's a shame we didn't have an opportunity to really sit down with Buddy or Lester before they passed away and really pick their brains about that.
I talked to Jackie and Roy Lee about it, but they weren't really all that interested. And that's something that that's a book that needs to be written as well because
absolutely.
But I don't know, and even so, as well as you and I were around Gil Lester and Bobby and Don when they were still alive, they were all so tight-lipped, they probably wouldn't have talked about it anyway.
Yeah, you'd have to talk to people, you know, you'd have to talk to people like Buddy and things like that, people that knew them, that, you know, now they're almost all those guys are gone, so there's, you know, nothing to worry about as to whether you're going to not be used or anything of that nature. But even just looking at the family tree of all of them there and how the branches worked and everything else, that's, I mean, that's, you're looking at a, you know, it's like Dallas is, you know, it's just a powerhouse of a group, of a family that had so much control. And it's just very interesting to look at the family tree and how everybody was involved.
And well, Buddy he had his finger in Florida, he had his finger in Georgia,
yeah.
I mean, Arizona like Buddy
Mobile.
Said. That's right.
You know, and that's what I was going to say. And same thing, Lester was in Florida. Lester was in Georgia for a while after the split. Mm-hmm. He was there. I don't know how involved as far as Mobile, how it got started. Like I said, Joe Gunther ran it. Of course, he was a promoter in Birmingham for many years, and he promoted New Orleans. Of course, Joe was a big star back in the 30s, you know, along that stretch of territory. So he just naturally rolled into being a promoter. But Mobile was basically, before it became a full-blown territory, it was just a stop to make gas money to get from New Orleans to Birmingham. And Joe was the promoter of record, but it was really Tarzan White and Nick Carter that ran and booked Mobile when they first started. Now, I don't know how true that, but I've been told, Jack Donovan told me that when the Welch family went in, they started in Dothan. Actually, Jack bought Dothan. And then Jack and Roy bought the Mobile territory, and I'm talking about Jack, the brother, not Jack Lester Jr., Jackie. But they brought Buddy in to be the promoter there. And, of course, you know, just like everywhere else, it had wrestlers who owned territories, they had figurehead promoters. That's how Rocky McGuire, you know, came in. He was from the Dyersburg area and knew the family, and so they brought him in at first as a referee, and then he became a promoter, you know, the promoter of record, and they used guys like Leroy Morris, who was Leroy was a radio or TV guy, but they used him too. Les Wolf would come down every once in a while. Skip Wenson was there. Because, you know, even after Lee bought in, they used Rocky as the figurehead promoter, even though Lee owned the territory. Rocky was booking, but, you know, they couldn't, you know, the athletic commissions took a serious frown on working wrestlers after being the promoter, too. So,
yes.
But, you know, I'd be interested. I know. The Hatfield part of it, supposedly they were part of the West Virginia, Tennessee Hatfields and the Hatfields and McCoy feud. How, you know, of course, Speedy married into the family by marrying Bonnie. But, you know, all of his sons were built a thing from Pawhuska, Oklahoma. And it's funny, when Buddy first came into Mobile again, he came in the same year Lee did. I guess they were sending feelers out to see what the territory was like before they bought it. In 52, Buddy came in. He was always billed as being from Artisan, New Mexico, of all places.
Yeah.
Now, how they picked that, I don't know. But that's where he was from. So, I would love to dig into all that and get more of their background, you know, as to how they got in the business, because I don't know that anybody ever said.
No, I don't think so. I've never heard it, and I thought about talking to Lester one time, but talking to Lester, it's like, get anything out of him, it's like, I mean,
yeah, exactly.
he just doesn't talk, you know. He's just not a talker at all. But, Buddy, maybe you can shed some light on this.
Well, let me tell you a little story first about Lester. He was wrestling somewhere. Cape Girardeau, Missouri, I believe. And Fuller was promoting it. So he got an interview on the radio for Lester and had to pay for it. So Lester goes down to do the interview that night. It's a championship match. Have Lester Welch in the studio with us tonight. You're wrestling here tonight, right? Yep. Who you wrestling? I forget who it was. Yep. Nope. Yep. That was it. And Bowen said, damn, Lester, I had to pay money and all I could hear was yep and nope. And the interview was like Scott said.
Yeah, that's interviewer's nightmare when you get somebody like that. And they.
And you go to the dressing room, Lester and me there in the dressing room. You know, you'd say, hey, how you doing, Lester? He looked up at Marilyn Mama. Okay. You know, he was real, real quiet.
Yes. You wouldn't even know he was in the room. The one thing I'd like to bring up, and maybe you have some more insight on this, but actually Roy was promoting, and he offered part of the territory or to come in as partners to a guy, and I know you know this guy, as Hot Gillum, who promoted Paducah, Kentucky. And Hot told him he didn't want to buy into the territory, Nashville territory. And then when the territory started, you know, growing, Hot came over to Dyersburg, and, of course, Roy's office was there in Dyersburg at the time. And he told Roy, he says, I decided I want to buy into the territory. Of course, the territory was doing good by then. And Roy looked at him, and he says, you're too late. I just sold half the company to Nick Gulas. And that's how Nick got into the business. But if Hot Gillum had been in there just a little bit sooner, Nick Gulas would have never had a, you know, an ownership in Nashville, if you know much about that.
Let me tell you, from my understanding how Nick got into it, Nick was, I don't remember what he was doing, but he met Roy some way, I don't know. But anyway, he said something about getting in the business or something, and he said something about, Nick said, yeah, I'd like to. And he gave him a mat cover and said, go to whatever town it was, and, you know, we'll go into business together. Now, as far as what that arrangement was, I don't know. He carried the mat cover to the town they needed it that night. But I don't know, you know, what this real story on that is. That's all I remember.
Yeah.
But yeah. A lot of the guys, supposedly, when Nick first started, treated him real, real bad. I mean, real bad. And make him ride the floorboard of the car and all. You know, so that's one reason he had such disdain for a lot of the wrestlers.
Right.
You can't blame him, you know.
That's when he was working for Chris Jordan down in Birmingham when Chris was promoting Jordan. Did you know Chris Jordan, by the way?
No, I didn't.
Didn't meet him?
No, Joe Denningberg was his partner down in Birmingham when I was down there.
Yeah.
He owned the pawn shop.
Yeah. I'd like to know more of the story about how Chris Jordan got out of promoting, whether he sold it to
Now, that name, to be honest with you, I never even heard that name before.
Yeah.
Which is unusual because you have no stuff but that I've never heard.
Right.
No, because the name I've always associated with Birmingham was Joe Gunther.
Yes, right. Yeah, Chris Jordan.
I know
was...
Nick, and I know you've seen it too. In when you did the Mobile Results book, Nick would come into Mobile in the 40s as a referee every once in a while. You know, they'd barely miss on a special. You know, back then it was called the National Wrestling Association, but they bill him as some troubleshooting referee from the headquarters and everything. But
I always wondered if they had the Southern, it was something like the Southern Promoters Alliance or something, and I forget what it was back then, but I always wondered if that was a legitimate deal or just something they used for the fans or, you know, I never really knew much about it.
I don't know.
Well, I'll say this on that, Scott. We had a meeting in Atlanta one time of all the Southern promoters. It was me and Bill Golden, Nick, Eddie Graham, the boys from the Carolinas. Of course, Jim Barnett was hosting it, and I don't remember who else was there. I know Lee and Bobby, Lee and Kelly was there, I know. But they had a meeting, but I don't, you know, they were just discussing about, you know, the payoffs, and make it, you know, where everybody can get a good, decent payoff.
What year was that, buddy?
That would have been around 75, maybe, 74. Because Dennis Hall had just bought Bill Golden's territory, and Bill come down, you know, in Dennis's place. So that's what I know. I don't remember the exact year. It was around 74 or 5. Because I come back up here in 76. I see up here to Memphis, you know, in 76. A little before 75, really. About the October or November of 75.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you remember much about the promotion in Nashville when Lee came up there with a whole Mike, I'm sure Mike knows a little bit about it, but Lee came in with his own promotion, and he had Rip, Randy Tyler, and several other guys come in.
I was there with him.
Okay. What was
let me tell you what happened. Jackie Fargo, Jack Pfeffer was his manager, and wherever Jackie wrestled, Pfeffer got a part of it. You know, percentage. Well, Nick, you know, got tired of paying it. And he said, look, Jackie, if I quit paying Pfeffer, will you stay with me? He said, well, hell yeah, give me that extra money. You know, Jackie. So Nick did. Well, when he did, Pfeffer got mad. He got in touch with Lee, and he put up the money for Lee to go into Nashville. And that's what the deal was.
Huh, wow.
Because I was there.
He had actually done that one time before, even before that. Where you're talking about is
67.
What I'm talking about was about 1967 or 8.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, because he had Ken Lucas was working for him, Eddie Sullivan, the Fields brothers, Bob Kelly even came up, Al Galeo.
Yeah, Don Fargo.
Yeah,
Fargo
right
was there. That Frank is Frank Fargo instead of Frank Dalton.
That's right. It
was. They did it. Lee went up there and ran in the 70s, too, but he only ran one card.
I don't remember.
I'll tell you, we was at the Hippodrome, same place Nick had matches. I think it was up there 3 or 4 weeks, if I'm not mistaken. And the last time it run, it was a real good house. Lee said made a good profit that night. But he didn't say what it was, you know. But I don't remember what seemed like Pfeffer took the money away or something. I don't know. That's long ago.
Yeah, they only ran, I think it was 4 or 5 weeks. Like you said, it was about a month. And
yeah, it wasn't very long.
Yeah. Of course, Roberto Soto, you know, he was in there at the time. And somebody named Jungle Boy, I don't know for sure which Jungle Boy.
You're looking at the same thing I'm looking at. Pepe and Ramon Perez, who Ramon worked for Bill Golden for a while, against Eddie Sullivan and Ken Lucas, the Black Infernos against Don Fargo and Luke Fields, Jungle Boy versus Bob Kelly, and Jim Dalton versus Lee Fields.
Yeah.
But I've got another clipping here, and I don't know if I'll be able to come up with it while we're on the phone, but I've got a clipping from I want to say 73 or so. Where they went up there and ran as well. And I can't remember who all put it.
If you could ever scan that, I would love to
see that. Yeah, if I can find it, if I've got it, if I've already got it scanned, I'll send it to you.
That was before I came up here anyway, so I'd just be curious about that. Well, man, there's so many things we could going to say there's so many things that we could talk to Buddy about as far as the Welches, and we might have to do that, you know, in the future, you know, go into more on it.
But
that'll be great with me just anytime.
Talking about them expanding, they ran Montgomery in 63 and again in 74. Lee did.
Yeah.
And so let me see I'm sorry, the 74 was Bill Golden. I've got a clipping out of a magazine from that territory.
Well, then Lee come in there after Dennis left, and Bill let Lee have it.
Well, they only ran, they would run spot shows up that way. I know they ran Selma a couple times up that way in 76.
Well, I wasn't there in 76. I left in 75. I'd worked for Lee in Louisiana, you know, in Mobile, too. And then when he came to Montgomery, I worked for him there. And then, anyway, to make a long story short, I just told Lee, I said, Lee, I think I'm going to leave. And Lee said, no, you ain't going nowhere. I said, Lee, I am, too. I said, you know, I just need to leave because I wasn't making any money, really. It's just, you know, I don't know, Montgomery was good, but something happened. I don't know what happened. You know, it just it didn't draw. And we run a couple of spot shows, and they didn't draw. Because when I run them before, they, you know, we, like I mentioned early, we packed it. But we went there the second time, like a year or two later, and it just wasn't getting over for some reason. I don't know why. But it wasn't.
Go ahead.
Do what?
I was going to say, I've got you in some, go ahead, Scott, we'll talk about it.
I feel like we're dancing. That's sort of the same way Buddy Fuller actually got control of Mobile, because Joe Gunther, who, you know, his office, he was based in New Orleans, and so since his crew had a drive to Birmingham, they'd go to Mobile on Monday night and then on up to Birmingham for the Tuesday night show. But the crowds were so bad that Gunther eventually quit sending his talent up there. It just wasn't worth him making the trip. And that's when Buddy went in and sort of established Mobile as a different territory of its own, as opposed to being part of the New Orleans territory.
I remember when Buddy got that, Mario went down there. He told me he was going to Florida, and I thought he meant Tampa. He said, no, down to Mobile, to Pensacola. I thought, really? He said, yeah, Fuller's got that now. But anyway. That was like, what, 73 or 53 or something, maybe?
53, yeah. They started
in the middle of 53. In fact, I went down there at that time. I know I called Bill, and he told me I could go to Meridian that night and referee. And Tuesday and Wednesday, he couldn't book me, but Mobile and Pensacola was running. He said, there's always guys need to ride, so you make money with riding. So, and then I'll have you in Panama City on Thursday. I said, okay. So I went down there, and sure enough, I think Sonny Meyer, Scotty Thompson, and somebody else rode from, no, Sonny wasn't there. It was somebody else. Down from Meridian down to Mobile. Then Mobile, of course, everybody showed up, so I didn't get to work. And Sonny and Scotty and somebody else rode over to Pensacola. And then Wednesday, they had the biggest advance they ever had in Pensacola. Then a big rainstorm come through. It was a racetrack. They had to cancel it. Me and Sonny went to the movie. We come out. The stars were shining. He said, look at that, Gabe. This beautiful weather. Why couldn't this happen earlier? But anyway, then we went to Panama City, you know, the next day. That was my first trip to Florida, and I was thrilled to death. Never been anywhere like that. Out on that beach, and two girls come by on the beach at Pensacola, and it was from Memphis. And they said, hey, what are you doing down here? Oh, I was a big shot. Oh, I'm wrestling tonight, you know. And they said, we've saved all year to come down here. And they left. Sonny said, Gabe, we got the best business in the world. He said, them girls have saved all year to come down here. And we're down here doing the same thing they're doing, and we're getting paid for it. So, you know, we did. We had a great business. You could go anywhere in the world you wanted to. Oh, you'd just pick the phone up.
That's right.
And you get your expenses paid.
One of the things people don't realize about, they you know, they always talk about New York this, New York that, and all these different, you know, Texas this, Texas that. Tennessee territory, if you lump everything together, the Welches, everything they had their hands in, it was huge because they you know, years ago the Welches promoted Missouri, Poplar Bluff, Sykeston. It was a huge territory. I mean, it wasn't all owned by the same people, but, you know, a lot of the same guys went to all the different places, you know.
Well, at one time we were running 45 pounds a week in Memphis, in Nashville territory.
Yeah.
45 a week.
Oh, you mean a dollar?
No, 45 in a week.
Oh,
45 pounds.
Yes, that's
no,
right.
No, 45. Oh, yeah, we did have 4 or 5 running on Monday. Memphis, Birmingham, Owensboro, and usually a couple of spot shows. Yeah. Let me tell you another little thing. You say Tennessee Territory, you didn't make money. I'm going to give you 3 instances, and every one of them is right. I'm in the territory, and I'm on top. I'm making $2,800 a week. Scott's in the middle. He's making $1,500. Somebody else is on the other end. He's making $85 a week because he's getting towns that's paying $15 and $20. Scott's getting them that's paying $50, $75, $80. I'm getting them paying maybe $200 or $300. We're all telling the truth. So if we left, how was Tennessee? Well, great, man. I was making $2,800 a week. Another guy said, well, I didn't make $15. Another one, I didn't make $85. Well, ain't nobody lying. They all tell the truth. But the first thing, well, somebody's lying here. It's according to where you were booked.
Yeah.
Ask Johnny Walker, Mr. Wrestling number 2, what he was making in 68 in Memphis. Well, I say Memphis, you know, Jarrett was running. And he told me he was averaging $2,800 to $3,200 a week. And that was in 68. So the day you multiply that by 10, what was he making?
$2,800, $3,000.
Yes, sir. But and they was making. I know what they were making, because I mean, you know, if you like say, 3 guys could be working, 4 guys get 200 in Memphis. We ain't talking about main event. Maybe 125 in Birmingham, 45 in Owensboro, and 25 in Edamina, Mississippi.
Yeah,
you know, so that's the difference. If you wasn't in the big town, you didn't make the big money.
Yeah.
And it's just according to, as they say, the pencils are what controls your pay.
That's
the pencil
right.
Means the one doing the booking.
Yeah, well, I think that's, you know, that's was true of any territory. I mean, you look at the guys who, just take Georgia for an example. You make money working in Augusta, you know, I won't say Savannah because Savannah never did draw well, but Atlanta, Marietta. But then you go down and you working for Fred Ward, you'd make money in Macon and Columbus, but then you got places like America's, you know, Valdosta, places
Athens.
Like that you're not going to make that. Athens, yeah, you're not going to make that much. So, like you said, buddy, it depends on where you were. Same thing, Mobile.
Exactly.
Mobile and Pensacola, you made money. Panama City, Dothan, you made money. Panama City, Quincy, you probably didn't do all that well, you know. And I don't know how well. I know you worked, you came back in 75 and did Hattiesburg several weeks in a row over there. I don't know how well Hattiesburg or those Mississippi towns do, but I'm sure, you know, Hattiesburg didn't do as well as Gulfport or somewhere, you know, more populated town. Or maybe they did. I don't know. I never worked in those towns. So
Hattiesburg was always a pretty good town, no far as payoff. You know, the crowd was always good. I didn't wrestle a lot, but when I did, it was good. Gulfport, I worked a couple of times, but it's been so long ago, I can't remember. In fact, I believe the promoter there the last time I was there was a guy, I don't know if you all remember him or not, Rube Wright. Rube was there. That was about 19, God, it don't seem that long ago, about 19... 61, maybe.
Yeah, 61, 62. That was when Rube was running it.
Because I had a reason. I remember I had a 61 Ford. It was a new car, you know, so it had to be like 61 or 2.
Well, guys, just about out of time. Buddy, I am so thrilled that you were able to join. We're definitely going to have you on again.
Well, it's an honor for y'all to ask me to be on the show.
It's a real education. I enjoyed it very much hearing you talk about your time. It was great.
Well, I appreciate it.
Scott, as always, you have a home here. So,
Thank you.
Anytime you've got... you got a project you want to talk about and everything, you're more than one. You've got a format here, so.
Thank you.
And sorry, Bobby wasn't able to stay on long with us, and sorry, Jerry wasn't with us, but Jay and I learned a lot. So We'll try and line up something. Scott, I know you want to join us again in a couple of weeks with Jerry Barber with us. So, buddy, if you're available, we may squeeze you in there as well.
That'll be great. Just give me a call.
All right,
buddy.
Thanks for being.
Thanks.
Okay.
Enjoy it. Good night, gentlemen.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Bye bye.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.